2015, an elite DFS Army Commando unit formed to bring high-level DFS strategy to the masses. Today, hated by DFS sharks and lineup sellers alike, they continue their quest to turn Joe into DFS pro.
This is the MLB Daily Dispatch, brought to you by the good folks over at DFSArmy.com. If you're not signed up with us, make sure you do so. We got a brand new promo code that we got going on here. Use the code OPENINGDAY. That's going to get you a free week of the DFS Army. Other than that, though, if you're signed up, you like what you see, you'll be able to sign up with us for $25 a month. But, again, not a bad idea to check it out. Make sure you like what you see going on here. So, again, use the promo code OPENINGDAY. You'll be able to get all that. And that is on DFSArmy.com. I'm your host, Al Walsh. Find me on Twitter at 14A.Walsh. Keith Hall joins me as always. You can find him on Twitter at BoomersDFSDaddy. So we literally just wrapped up the first day of MLB season. Not the first real day. We all know that that is today. But I got any big takeaways that you saw from anything today?
Yeah, I told you John Lester sucked.
I didn't say that. It was a good call on Carlos Martinez.
Yeah, I kind of called Carlos Martinez.
No, you did. You didn't kind of. You did. You called him.
I really liked him and the way he kind of showed his moxie in the WBC. I know he didn't pitch a lot, but, you know, still. You know, you just kind of look at his progression over the last couple of years, and it's been really, really nice. Let's see here. Oh, Masahiro Tanaka stacking the Rays was profitable.
Indeed.
And let's see here. The second game was absolutely, completely amazing.
Awesome. And by the way, how awesome are the Diamondbacks with Pollock back in the lineup?
Oh, dude, it completely changed him and Peralta completely changed that offense. Like, yep. I think a lot of people forget one of the reasons why they were so bad last year was because Pollock went down the last spring training game or the second to last spring training game, and then David Peralta hurt his wrist on opening day, you know. Mm-hmm. And they were out for a good majority, I mean, most of the year. I mean, those two bats in that lineup completely changed the complexity of that offense. Even going against a guy like Madison Bumgarner, you know, they had good, kind of good splits and good, I mean, good matchups. There was some ways to kind of exploit it. I thought I was going to be in trouble because of the way that Bum started.
Mm-hmm.
But it turned out to be good. And, guys, that's something that as we get, you know, farther into the season, we'll examine more bullpens and stuff as well, because it's not just like we spend a lot of time analyzing starting pitching because, obviously, they, you know, we expect them to throw 5-6 innings. But they're not the only ones that we can attack. You know, very, very rarely are your guys, especially early on in the season, going to throw a complete game. So that's just kind of something that, you know, is a food for thought as we, you know, progress throughout the season. So,
indeed, indeed. All right. So, you know, we're going to try to go everything as quick as possible, but not take any shortcuts with it either. So one thing I want you to do is to explain for everybody what we're going to have on your tool. I know you're going to have Boomers Bombers, the baseball equivalent to Boomers Ballers that we see during NBA. But we've also got a lineup tool that's really going to help people out. You know, as soon as the lineups become official, we'll have them. But we're also going to have some numbers along with that. We just want to get you guys familiarized with those if you're brand new to MLB this season. So I know what we're going to have: WOBA, ISO, and runs created, I believe.
Yeah, we're going to have WAY runs created plus
in
there.
Okay.
We'll start at the beginning. WOBA, basically, everybody knows what on-base percentage is or on-base average. It's basically, it's a weighted on-base average. It takes everything except for home runs. It takes everything including home runs, and it kind of weights everything to a league average. And it's each has its own little kind of, you know, weight within the actual number. A league average, as I pull up Fangraphs here, last season was the league average last year for weighted on base against lefties was a 318. You know, against righties, we're looking at a 318. kind of funny. You know, ISO was a 167 versus righties, and then a WRC plus is 97. Now, the good thing about it is, like, if we go to WOBA, it basically takes walks, sacrifice flies, hit by pitches. It includes a lot of this stuff in there, you know, as it goes. It basically is going to take OPS and put it a little bit higher. It's a very, very good complex way to kind of tell exactly how much your guy is getting on base. You know, WOBA a couple years ago for DFS was a huge thing. The league average is right there around, like I said, 316 last season. And then anything below that, you know, when you get down to 290, you're looking at awful. Now, this is important because, you know, you get points for getting on base. You get points for singles, walks, hit by pitches. The only thing you don't get points for is obviously errors and fielder's choices, even if you are getting on base, which aren't included into this statistic. So, you know, walks are weighted the lowest, you know, hit by pitches, and then singles, and then doubles, then triples, then home runs obviously have the higher weighting within the statistics. So it's a really good measure to see exactly, you know, how productive your guy can be in just terms of raw numbers against that handedness of pitching. And so we talk about WOBA a lot, and because that's a basic starting point on whether or not your guy's going to be in a good matchup no matter what. And, you know, we'll talk about reverse splits and stuff like that. We're going to try to ease you guys in slowly. And as numbers normalize, we'll start talking more in depth throughout the season. So it's a really, really, really good measure on how to kind of start your research.
All right. So typically, you know, if you listen to us during basketball season with the podcast, just go game by game breakdown. That way we're able to, you know, just hit each aspect of what we think is important. And, you know, you guys could use that to your advantage as well.
Are we going to talk about ISO and WRC plus real quick?
Oh, sure.
Okay. So ISO is basically raw power. It, you know, obviously, home runs are weighted the highest, and then triples and then singles are triples, doubles, then singles. And basically, anything over a 200 ISO is phenomenal. And that's what you're kind of shooting for. WRC plus is what I call the fantasy, the DFS statistic. And basically what it does is it accounts for ballpark in there. So it basically accounts for if your guy would do something at a neutral park, this is what you can expect. And it's how many, you know, or what kind of contribution does he have to your team's offense or to the offense of his team without weighting in, you know, ballpark. So it doesn't have inflated numbers for the guys in Coors Field. In fact, typically you'll see guys that the Rockies outs, or you'll see the Rockies WRC plus usually a little bit lower than you would if they were, you know, if they accounted for Coors Field in there. So it's really kind of a measure of a statistic on what kind of impact your guy has on that offense. Now, what our lineups page does, if they're red, and you only get this if you're a VIP subscriber, because it's got our DFS Army grade, and it's got basically this and a couple other stats weighted into this grade, and it's based off of matchup against that handedness of pitching that they're facing that day and stuff like that. And it's a statistic that nobody else has. It's created by me, and it's something that I take a lot of pride in. Now, right now, it's a raw number against the handedness of pitcher that they're facing. Eventually, it'll have ballpark weighted in there, and then as statistics start to normalize throughout the season, it'll also have, you know, the talent of the pitcher that they're facing weighted in there as well. So that's something that's good as well. Basically, what our lineups page does is it does something that no other DFS site actually has out there. You'll hear a lot of people say, like the Braves last year, they had a wOBA of 289 against right-handed pitching or left-handed pitching, whatever it was, I forget. Well, that's great, but that tells you, you know, everybody that's within that team. You know, everybody that's ever taken an at bat, it's into that statistic. Well, what our lineups page does is it gives you the wOBA of the guys just in the lineup. So it doesn't take into account the guy that came over for 2 weeks right before the trade deadline that was called up and was showcased and, you know, absolutely just either sucked or tore it up. It's only going to account for the guys that are in the lineup that day. If the lineup is red, if the players are red, that means the lineup's been, it's not confirmed yet. As soon as it turns green, the lineup's confirmed. So there, that's when you can start taking the statistics or the stats basically, and you can see the, you know, project or the wOBA, the ISO and the WRC plus and the accumulative DFS Army grade of the lineup that your pitcher is facing.
Gotcha.
So it's something that nobody else does. And it's something that, you know, I started to take into effect a lot towards the middle to end of part last year was I was doing a lot of this. And it really, really does help you because if a team is batting 290, has a 290 wOBA, and a 130 ISO versus left-handed pitching, but the lineup that they throw out there that day actually has a 185 and a 329, 185 ISO and a 329 wOBA, then, you know, you could end up making a wrong decision by throwing a pitcher against that team when that team's total statistics aren't really giving you the full, you know, just the accumulative of everybody that's taken in a bat doesn't give you the full, you know, picture of what your pitcher that you've taken actually could be facing that day. So,
gotcha. I did not mean to cut you off before.
No, you're fine. You're fine. We're
with not meaning to explain everything. I thought everything was all looped into one, but
yeah, good. we're both tired and it's been a long day already. So it's gonna be. It's going to be one of those fun little podcasts. So we'll get this done, get it going, and then, you know, enjoy the day tomorrow.
Indeed, indeed. All right, let us begin with our game-by-game breakdown in a ballpark that I am not very fond of. This is Citi Field, home of the New York Mets. Julio Teheran's going to be going for the Atlanta Braves, who are visiting there, and it'll be Noah Syndergaard for the Mets, both guys right-handers. And a little bit of interesting history for Tehran against the Mets, 2-0 against them last season. He did pitch 30 innings against them, only allowed 15 hits, 3 walks, only 3 earned runs in those 30 innings, but only 18 strikeouts. Not a big strikeout guy. He was 2-0 at Citi Field last season, absolutely dominated the Mets in both starts. He's got some pretty good numbers here against a good chunk of this Mets order. Look, I'm not saying, you know, this is a pitcher that we should be using in GPPs for tomorrow, but I will definitely be cooling my jets on the Mets bats.
I'm telling you it's a pitcher that you can use in GPPs tomorrow.
Okay.
I love Tehran tomorrow. And the reason is because I think everybody's going to load up on the bats because there's for this sure. stigma that Tehran is not good away from Atlanta. Well, that didn't really play out last year.
No, it was the exact opposite.
Exactly. So,
because 2 years ago he was so great at home, and then he completely reversed his game last season.
Yeah, and I mean, this is a Mets squad that, you know, they've got some boppers in there. You know, you've got Yoenis Cespedes, Jubal Cabrera's back. He had a good he was playing pretty, or he was hitting pretty good when he went down for injury, but I mean, they don't have David Wright. They've got Neil Walker. Curtis Granderson's basically it's all or nothing type of guy for him. You know, you'll hear us talk about BVP numbers in the morning. We don't have none of the sites have them pulled up yet.
So I got them. Oh yeah.
Okay, so you know, you got Lucas Duda taking over there. Or taking over at first base and coming back, Travis d'Arnaud, which I think it's actually more important that he's in the lineup to Noah Syndergaard than he is to Lucas, or than he is, you know, facing the Braves pitchers. But you know, Jay Bruce looked like absolute complete shit, not only during spring training but also at the end of last year. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a lot of strikeouts that can be had here. And I really kind of do like Julio Tehran. I mean, he's kind of in the middle as far as DFS Armin grade for pitchers, but it's not like he's the low end of the totem pole. So.
No, and you know what kind of makes this whole thing interesting is that Noah Syndergaard really struggled against Atlanta. He only faced them one time last season, but the start did not go well. He only made it through 3 2/3, gave up 8 hits, had 3 walks, 5 earned runs in that time. So, you know, we know the big thing about Syndergaard, too, is we can certainly get our fast guys in the lineup against him to steal some bases. Last season, he allowed 48 stolen bases in 57 attempts. I mean, you know, he does have some, you know, good numbers here. I mean, 218 strikeouts last season. You got that. He was tied for ninth most in Major League Baseball. But, again, if I'm going to be picking anybody from the Atlanta Braves, I'm going to be trying to get stolen bases on this guy.
Yeah, and, you know, right now, projected lineup, you can probably look at a guy like Ender Inciarte. You can look at, I don't know how much Dansby, we got a cup of coffee with Dansby Swanson last year, towards the latter end of the year. But, I mean, I'm firmly, do you have, Freddie Freeman's BVP numbers against Syndergaard there?
Not right on hand, but I will have them in a second. So. Okay.
I'm going to be interested to see that. I can't remember if that was a good thing or a bad thing for Freeman, but, look, you can make a lot of money by playing Braves because they don't garner a lot of respect in the DFS community. and that's I guess putting it lightly.
Yeah.
You know, they're a team that generally people like to pick on, and Noah Syndergaard's going to be very, very popular tomorrow, and we'll give you some options on where you can go to kind of differentiate that you could have just as much upside as far as K potential, if not more.
All right, so your Freeman numbers here. Only faced Syndergaard 6 times over the course of his career. Does have 3 hits. He's got a double, a homer here, and you know only 2 strikeouts there. So
not a huge sample size, but you know, he does, he has hit them hard.
Yeah.
Which is something else that we can kind of look to. So, that's important in my opinion. It really kind of is. You know, Noah Syndergaard's actually got the, and this is why early on in the season, you can't take a lot of these numbers into, account. You know, they're not set in stone because according to last year's numbers for the Atlanta Braves, Noah Syndergaard's actually got the best matchup, or the second best matchup. I'm sorry. Obviously Clayton Kershaw's got the best, but, they did a lot of, you know, they got Matt Kemp at the latter end of the season. That helped out a lot. You know, they did acquire Brandon Phillips. Ender Inciarte and Dansby Swanson should help out. This is a much better ball club this year than they were last year. So,
absolutely.
Syndergaard is he's got K upside, and if you want to go for a cheaper version of, you know, a Clayton Kershaw, I still probably wouldn't recommend him in cash. So I just don't want to touch this Braves team right now.
I got you. One guy that I had a lot of success with, and, you know, I say this from the stolen base upside, but more so for the future, but Nick Markakis, he's a guy that typically is not going to wow you. He can get on base. He can do a lot of different things, but he's always ridiculously underpriced. And if you're rolling with a Kershaw or a Strasburg or any of these other high-priced pitchers tomorrow, he is not a bad guy at all to kind of get some salary relief going and possibly get some, you know, maybe like 9 points, something like that. You know, if he gets on base twice and scores a run, that, you know, that's a great day for his price. So
yeah, he's a little high priced tomorrow. He's 2,700 on FanDuel. That I think that's, I can't see, this is what we've been having such good success with NBA, and we're kind of, I'm sitting here going 2,700. Is that where he was at the end of last season? And I don't think it was. I think he kind of normalized right there around 2,300, 2,400. But he was somebody that won us a lot of money later on in the season, especially against right-handed bats. And that's not something that I'm afraid to go to at all. I really do get off the grid when it comes to baseball. And, you know, I might not pick on Clayton Kershaw tomorrow, but there's a good possibility that I'm going to be very, very, very underweight on him.
All right. Let's talk about next game here. We'll move it to the nation's capital here. The Miami Marlins are going to be throwing Edinson Volquez, who makes his first start in the National League since 2014. And, you know, Strasburg here at home for the Nationals, probably one of the better dollar per point pitchers on the board that we're going to see in this one.
Volquez, until he tilts everybody.
Volquez is 1-1 against the Nationals in his last three starts. Decent numbers. But Strasburg was great against the Marlins last season. 2-0 with a 1.93 ERA. 17 strikeouts in 14 innings. That's a big thing. And he got off to a hot start last year. 4-0 in April last season. Had 40 strikeouts in 36 innings.
And then sat against Clayton Kershaw and ruined the rest of his season.
Yes, indeed. he did. The one bad thing about Strasburg, though, and, you know, this Marlins team does have some pop in their lineup. He did give up 12 homers in 87 and 2/3 innings at home last season. So
do we know what the – hold on. Let me look and see what the temperature is going to be there. Because when it's a little –
I had some things, yes.
Okay, when it's a little bit warmer there – then the ball kind of flies. They don't have that one on their lineups page. So
basically at first pitch tomorrow, we're looking at 65, 66 degrees.
So
wind blowing out.
It shouldn't play like a bandbox tomorrow.
So, but keep this in mind too, wind blowing out about 11, 12 miles an hour out to left field.
So, ooh, that's in that jet stream.
Yeah.
Shit.
By the way, if you want to check out weather for all the baseball games, I really like what Swish Analytics does for their MLB weather. They have some really good stuff. Hour by hour breakdown of, you know, what the temperature is going to be, what the precipitation percentage is, the wind speed, all that kind of stuff. So I would highly recommend them for your weather needs.
Yeah, I want to get we're obviously, this is we're talking about a 6-month grind that we're about to go on, people. So we're not going to be able to hit on everything right off the bat. We will hit on everything throughout our conversations on the pod and Slack. A lot of this stuff is going to be covered, but it can't be all covered immediately for opening day. Okay, so let's get into a little bit of these matchups here. The big, I think one of the higher owned stacks of the day is going to be the first four in the, or at least the first three in this Nationals lineup: Trey Turner, Daniel Murphy, Bryce Harper. They're all above 3,500 on FanDuel, as they should be. They're all above 4,500 on DraftKings, as they should be. And they have, I think Daniel Murphy actually has the best DFS Army grade of the day as far as hitters.
Interesting. I'm one of the purest swings in the game.
Yeah, he is. He came second in the batting race last year. Really, really high on base guy, 84.29. He's got it by 9 points over Jose Altuve tomorrow. So, he's got a very, very high, DFS Army grade. So I don't mind it. I'm trying to kind of gauge exactly what the ownership is going to be. This projected Nationals lineup has a WOBA of 345 and an ISO of 190. It's going to, like, these guys can put up runs. The question is Bryce Harper going to make, is he going to bounce back from last year? And I want to say yes, but it's gonna end up being a wait and see type thing. I don't mind fading Bryce Harper because I think him and Mike Trout are going to be two of the higher owned players on the slate. They always carry a higher ownership anyways, but I think they're going to be a high slate, and anybody over 30% in tournaments, I have zero problem fading.
Yes, we know you're Stila. If I'm not mistaken, Bryce Harper has been pretty good on opening day. He was one of the – I believe he was tied with Greg Bird for most homers during the spring. He was seeing the ball real well there. I understand spring training, much different monkey than the regular season, but – I mean, I've seen him listed as a, huge bounce back candidate by a lot of different writers and, things like that.
Of course, he's an easy one to do.
Yes. I mean, it can't get much worse, right?
Yeah.
So, against Volquez, I think that's that's probably a good starting point for him to get back on the right track. You know, you look at the rest of the lineup now, the Nationals added Adam Eaton, which I think is going to do a lot for their lineup, put the guys on base. I mean, Trey Turner was a guy that I was initially a bit sour on. You gave me a little nudge, and then all it took was a couple monster performances to be like, okay, I was wrong on that one.
Yeah.
So, you take a look at this lineup, and then you add Adam Lind in there, who's going to be playing first base for the Nationals now.
He's going to be splitting time with Ryan Zimmerman.
There's going to be just a lot of power. I think, the Nationals are probably going to be, that team in the NL East this season. I don't think it's going to be the Mets. But, this is probably going to be a good kickoff. And you're right. I think they're certainly worthy of a fade here, just because I believe they're going to be highly owned. It's the first... it's the first game that's kicking off the day tomorrow. So people are going to feel more comfortable, having those guys in their lineups, knowing that they're in there. The weather's not bad. So, yeah, I want to have some exposure to the Nationals. Don't get me wrong. And it might come in the form of like Adam Eaton or Adam Lind. No, I don't have a thing for guys named Adam, but I would like to get lower ownership to those guys.
Oh, Heidi Watney, you are in mid-season form, my lady.
I can't wait to see Kelly Nash again. I missed her.
Oh, man. My exposure probably would be, going to Trey Turner or an Anthony Rendon or, just grabbing one or two in a mini stack and then getting out maybe towards the middle or top of the lineup. You know, I don't even on FanDuel, I don't even mind Matt Wieters there at 2,700.
Right. We're going to – I over under on how many times I'm going to – that's right. He's there now.
Yeah. We're gonna be doing that a lot at the beginning of the season. You know, he's one of those guys that you can get some cheap power on, and I mean it's he's kind of taking a hit as far as ballpark, but it's not a huge one. I know Oriole Park and Camden Yards is kind of a bam box in the American League, but you know, as the summer heats up, you know, so is National Park. So it's gonna play a little bit bigger. That's kind of why I like, you know, guys like Daniel Murphy, Trey Turner, who not only have some power, but they can also run a little bit and, you know, hit the gaps. But, you know, it's kind of one of those things, you know, you get, if you go Trey Turner, Daniel Murphy to start it off and they both get on base and Bryce Harper hits a 3-run dong, then you're sitting there going, okay, well, at least I'm not totally behind the eight ball. But I don't mind that. So, what about the Marlins here? Because I've got a couple thoughts here, and I'm wondering if you feel the same way.
Okay. One guy, I mean, you know, of course, we've got the wind going there for Giancarlo Stanton. He had an actually – I'm sorry about that. He had an interesting, you know, WBC where he was batting down in the eight hole, which is typically not, you know, where he's used to. I've been hearing a lot of good things about Christian Yelich, how he's – probably going to be the one leading the Marlins this season, and you know he's a candidate for a big breakout season. That's an interesting matchup since you're probably not going to have a lot of people going against Strasburg. I wouldn't mind going there. I don't have that much interest, but I have interest in what you have interest in. I'm interested to hear.
I do like Christian Yelich, but the guy I'm focusing on is Justin Bour.
Okay.
He's 2,800 on FanDuel. He's 3,200 on DraftKings. This is a guy that can hit the ball to the moon. We think that Giancarlo Stanton's power is amazing, and it is. Don't get me wrong. But my problem with Giancarlo Stanton is he steps in the bucket. If you don't know what that means, then you will.
I did my whole baseball career.
Then you will as we go on. But for my baseball people, that they know what that means. Go and look at that home run, that mammoth shot that he hit in the WBC. And he is pulling still to this day. Like, I don't know what happened last year, but all of a sudden he forgot how to, you know, really hit and approach. It's like he's trying to hit everything to the moon. Well, Justin Bour has got that sweet, nice lefty stroke that's got that natural uppercut, and he can hit it to the moon. Not saying that Stanton can't, but Bour really can't. I mean, last year against right-handed pitching, he had a 228 ISO. I mean, we think that Stanton's power is crazy. He only had a 237 ISO versus right-handed pitching last year. I mean, Justin Bour is going to go overlooked by a lot of people, and I really, really do like him. If you go with a little mini stack of Bour and Derek Dietrich, who had a 370 wOBA against right-handed pitching last year. Now, he's not going to hit for a lot of power, but he did have, you know, he can get on base. If you can get 15 points out of them on FanDuel tomorrow, or maybe get a home run from Justin Bour, then you're going to be happy because that's going to be low-owned and it's going to be cheap. And I mean, I guess if you really wanted to stack it, you could go Yelich, Stanton, Ozuna, Bour.
Okay. Real quick before we move on to the next game, where do you place Strasburg amongst the top pitchers tomorrow?
He has.
I mean, we don't have to talk about the other ones. Just in terms of, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4. Where do you place him?
He is third.
Third? Okay, that yeah. Seems fair.
I'll give you the top seven, so you know who he's being, and I'm not going to give him an order, but so you know who he's kind of being in the discussion with, because, okay. I mean, tomorrow's opening day. This is one of the few days of the year that basically everybody's throwing their ace. He's along guys like, you know, Rick Porcello. Sorry, this is going to be eight. Rick Porcello, Corey Kluber, Noah Syndergaard, Justin Verlander, Clayton Kershaw, Yu Darvish. Those are the guys that he's ranked up with. And the difference between the 7 and 8 guys is 9 points. Whereas the difference between 2 and 7 is only 10 points.
Okay.
So that's how big of a gap there is when you start talking about it.
By the way, you know, as you probably know from our NBA podcast, we're big on the Vegas things. I completely forgot to mention them for the two games so far. So Washington here with Strasburg, they have the second highest money line total here at minus 215. The Mets, who we talked about in the first game, they are the third highest at minus 175. So keep that in mind as well. All right, let's get to the next game. A very unorthodox game for opening day. We've got the Pittsburgh Pirates at the Boston Red Sox here. Going for the Pirates is Gerrit Cole, and going for the Red Sox, we've got the reigning AL Cy Young Award winner, Rick Porcello. Cole has actually only faced Boston once over the last three seasons. He got the win against them when he did face them, 7 innings, 6 hits, 2 earned, 7 Ks in that one. He does have a 2.58 ERA in April over the last five seasons. If you're going to be using Boston hitters against Cole, though, make sure you do it with the left-handed bats. 326 average against them last season with 862 from OPS from that side of the plate. He did allow a 301 batting average last season on the road, and he can steal some bases against him. He did allow 18 on 20 attempts last season, so keep that in mind. And also 64 stolen bases on 81 attempts over the last three seasons. I was listening to a podcast last night. I'm going to reference this one a couple times, and I recommend a lot of people go check it out. But Joe Pita from ESPN Chalk was on Beating the Book with Gil Alexander, and they were talking about, you know, teams that were, you know, who could make a big impact, who were going to take a step back, you know, all that kind of thing. And the Pirates were actually, you know, one of his most confident underplays. You know, you got a lot of guys on this team that are kind of, you know, with their careers tailing off. You know, the main guy you can talk about is Andrew McCutchen. You know, he certainly did not have the kind of career, or did not have the kind of year that we have been used to seeing from him last year. But, you know, just in terms of attacking Cole in this one, I think you can certainly get some Red Sox here. And it's no secret that they have one of the best offenses in baseball either.
Yeah, it's really not a secret. They're really, really kind of efficient when it comes to how they use their analytics and placing guys in the order. I'm really, really kind of excited to be able to exploit this matchup here. Not in terms of, I think Rick Porcello is a bad play. More in terms of, I think that, you know, you've got guys like Starling Marte and Gregory Polanco, and David Freese is going to get a lot more playing time with the absence of Jung Ho Kang. John Jaso was a sneaky guy last year on opening day, and he was, because he was leading off mostly. And he's going to move down in the order and probably get some more RBI opportunities, especially against right-handed pitching. He's always somebody that we like. But Starling Marte kind of has a little bit of reverse splits against right-handed pitching. And basically what this means is, you know, he hits righties either just as good, if not better, than he does lefties. Normally, you'll hear a lot of people talk about the platoon advantages that they have and stuff like this. And you'll get a lot of your analytical guys. They only play guys with a positive platoon advantage. We'll get into the specifics about all that later. But you'll find that, you know, right-handed bats going against right-handed pitching, they tend to be a little bit lower owned than, you know, a left-handed bat going against a right-handed pitcher. So I think that Marte is going to be lower owned, not only because he's priced higher, but because of the platoon advantage over Gregory Polanco, who's batting in that cleanup hole. So,
all right. Just a couple of things on Porcello last season. Of course, 189 strikeouts in 223 innings pitched, 16 most in baseball. He was 13-1 last season at Fenway Park, although we did have better numbers on the road, so go figure that. And, yes, we've got that. I'm very excited to talk about these Boston bats, if you can't tell. I mentioned the fact that, you know, left-handed bats are, you know, that was the kryptonite for Cole last season, so... Are we looking specifically at that, or you kind of want to take that anti-platoon advantage that you were just talking about and use it for their Sox?
It's weird because I'm wondering how they're going to split up these right-handed bats that are supposed to be in the middle of the order. You've got Betts, Hanley, and Bogarts that are sitting right there in the middle of that order. I wonder if they're going to throw – are we looking at Pedroia leading off or batting second? See, the projected lineup I have has Pedroia leading off, but I'm thinking that isn't that going to be Jackie Bradley Jr.?
No, I mean, they had him down around the 6-7 hole a lot last season. I've heard a lot of Andrew Benintendi. He's definitely going to be batting second for this Red Sox team. So, you know, I guess that kind of just does put Pedroia in the leadoff hole, unless they want to go with Mookie Betts there or Xander Bogaerts. But, I mean, those guys were absolutely crushing the ball last season. The thing about them, they have, like, a ridiculous, you know, litany of ways that they can go. I mean, hell, even Pablo Sandoval had a great spring training, which is amazing because everybody thought he was dead. And, you know, he popped off. Mitch Moreland's back there.
Amazing what happens when you lose 35 pounds.
Indeed. And then, you know, we even got Sandy Leon, who we saw at times have some pretty big games for the Sox last season. He is extremely cheap on both sides. He might not be a bad option to use at catcher, especially if the Sox are going to be batting around. This game does have a total of 9, so I got to think that most of that's going to be coming from the Red Sox side of things.
Yeah, that's pretty typical when you get into Fenway. It's one of the better hitters ballparks, especially for, you know, left-handed bats and righties too. But, you know, lefties that can go the other way, kind of like David Ortiz. I mean, David Ortiz made a living out of just peppering the Green Monster. Jesus, Bumgarner. Lift and separate, why don't you?
I saw that earlier. So majestic.
You know, Andrew Benintendi, we didn't see a lot of him last year because he came up and he was starting to get into his own, and then he got hurt, and then he came back and he was doing really well. But he's still very, very much a very raw player. Mm-hmm. And I think that with all the talk that he's been getting, I think he's going to go highly owned, and we don't know what type of player this guy is yet. Don't get me wrong, I love his game, and I think he's going to be a fantastic Major League Baseball player. But in tournaments tomorrow, I'm willing to just go with, you know, some of these other guys that can put the ball over the wall. You know, Mookie, Hanley, Xander, you know, I don't even mind, like you said, a Pablo who's going to be next to nothing owned at third base. You know, I don't mind some of those in tournaments either. So,
fair enough. Hey, one thing I forgot to mention here too: Porcello's numbers against the Pirates are ridiculous. Just in terms of the BVP and, you know, who's done it against him. The only issue that I have with it, though, right? So he's got. Let's see, 49 plate appearances against current Pittsburgh Pirates, and, you know, the good majority of them he's definitely going to see tomorrow. But in those 49 plate appearances, only 8 strikeouts. So that scares me. I know, you know, Porcello's probably going to get the run support tomorrow, but if we're looking at strikeout upside, it just has not been there in the past against the Pirates. So keep that in mind.
Yep, I agree.
All right, let's take a look here. We got Keith's boys. He's so excited that we get to talk Rockies baseball with John Gray on the mound for the Rockies. Keith's expecting mighty big things out of him this season. He goes up against last year's darling for the Brewers, Junior Guerrera. Gray actually had a very good start Miller Park last season. Did not get the decision. I believe I remember this game, like, in my mind. But six innings pitched, four hits, three walks, two earned runs, 10 strikeouts against the Brewers in that one. Did not have good numbers on the road last season, though. 3-8 there with 4.91 ERA. Let's take a look at Guerrero from the other side. He had a great first campaign, 9-3 with a 2.81 ERA last season. Pretty good at home, especially being in that hitter's haven. 5-2 with a 2.23 ERA, and he held opposing batters to a 2.09 average. Interesting about Guerrero, and this could be a benefit to him. It could be a benefit to the Rockies. You might know more about this since, you know, you're a career baseball player, but he has never faced any of the current Rockies that are on their roster right now. Last season, right-handed batters hit 231 against him, while left-handed bats only hit 191 against him. So, with all that being said, talk a little bit about Gray, because you know him very well, and he is definitely a good GPP option tomorrow.
Yeah, if you want to go away from Clayton Kershaw, Noah Syndergaard, get to a lower-owned guy, he's still going to be popular, but he's not going to be as popular as these guys.
What do you think, like, on this huge slate? What kind of percentage are you thinking?
15% on FanDuel. Okay. Maybe a little bit higher on DraftKings, but not much. Look, I love John Gray. I've been watching him since he was a junior here at the University of Oklahoma. He's developed, and this is what's funny, is I've watched him during spring. And some people, well, his spring training numbers, you know, against the Giants, he got roughed up. Let me tell you something. Against the Giants in spring training, he threw nothing but fastballs and cutters. He did not throw a slider. He did not throw a curveball. He did not throw a changeup. He threw fastballs and cutters. And that was it. So, he got touched up when everything was within a 5-mile-an-hour, you know, difference. Tony Walters will be his catcher. He is one of the best catchers in Major League Baseball as far as pitch framing, which it might not seem like a lot, but it does help. He's also one of the better ones as far as throwing runners out. He's got a very quick pop time. He's very good at throwing runners out. He's going to help control that running game. And John Gray has a new pickoff move, which is going to help guys or control guys like Jonathan VR as well. He's got a wipeout slider. He's got a curveball that he's going to start featuring as well. I would love for the roof to be closed so it's more of a controlled environment and it's not more of a bandbox.
I believe you're going to see that tomorrow too because rain is in the forecast in Milwaukee.
There we go.
Yep.
Yes, John Gray is one of my top GPP pitchers of the, and it's not a homeristic thing. there will be times where I say, no, this is a bad matchup. Do not play John Gray. In fact, there will be times where I say stack against John Gray this season. And they won't always come at Coors. But yes, John Gray is firmly in play because I just don't think that anybody's going to, not a lot of people are going to play him. I mean, they were kind of introduced to him last season. But this is a guy that's got 10 strikeout upside and he can do it within 5-6 innings. So I don't think he's going to go much more than that. So as long as he can limit the walks and the damage, he's going to get you close to double digit strikeouts tomorrow.
Fair enough. All right. What are we looking at with bats here from both sides? Because number one, I mean, you brought up a great point with Tony Walters and him being able to maybe limit the running game. Well, that's going to be put to the test very early because we know the Brewers led the league in stolen bases last season. They're gonna run. That's pretty much all they can do. So, well, they got a little bit of pop, I guess. But
they have one pop.
We know they're gonna run. All right. Any interest from either side here?
Let's start with the Brewers because I think it's a little bit simpler and easier. Jonathan VR is interesting because, like you said, of that stolen base upside. He stole, what was it, close to 60 bases last season? I know he led National League, and I can't remember if he led all of baseball, but I know he led the National League in stolen bases last year. But he's kind of a one-trick pony. That's his game, is speed, which is good because he's at the top of the lineup. It's just very odd to see that coming from a third baseman / second baseman. Not the second baseman part, but the third baseman part. That is very odd. I don't mind him and Braun in a mini stack, I guess. But that would only be as kind of like a quote-unquote hedge life if you've got John Gray as a pitcher in a lot of other lineups. You know, I'm thinking that if anybody's going to kind of get to John Gray, it's going to be Ryan Braun. And Jonathan Villar's obviously got that run scoring and stolen base upside. So that's probably where I would be looking if I'm going to be non-biased. I won't have any exposure to it, but they are options.
Fair enough. I know you disagreed with this one, but you know, again, if you look, you need value tomorrow if you're rolling with Kershaw, one of the top pitchers. But Eric Thames will probably, he's projected to bat cleanup tomorrow, 2,200 on FanDuel, 3,800 on DraftKings. So again,
a mistake.
We're trying to squeeze some value in, but
we'll get to some value because I've got some value. But I think Eric Thames is a mistake, and it has nothing to do with John Gray. I would say this if he was facing Gerrit Cole, Rick Porcello, or anything. this is a guy that, you know, the Brewers basically signed out of the Korean League.
Talk about Korean baseball like it's just the absolute worst.
No, but the quality of pitching is not near what Major League Baseball pitching is. And John Gray is one of the top pitchers in the National League as far as being able to limit contact. I think Eric Thames is a mistake. I know people are going to disagree with me, and we have some value. Trust me. I have some value for you.
All right. But what about your Rockies, fellas?
Anybody but Mark Reynolds and Tony Walters. Tony Walters is supposed to, he's evidently revamped his swing a little bit. I've seen a lot of it in spring training, but I want to see it against higher quality pitching before we go there. Mark Reynolds, the only reason Mark Reynolds is going to be in the lineup tomorrow is because Ian Desmond got hurt. And he's going to be probably missing at least the first month, if not 6 weeks of the season. Got hit by a pitch and broke his wrist. But that's the only reason. He was brought back on a minor league contract, and he's going to make the team just because of that. I think people are going to forget about Trevor Story. I think the Rockies, as far as a full stack, are going to go completely overlooked because nobody likes playing the Colorado Rockies and paying their salaries when they're not at Coors Field. I've talked about this on numerous occasions. I've made a lot of money stacking the Rockies on opening day the last two seasons. And even though I'm going to have other teams, I'm going to have Rocky stacks against Junior Guerrero, even though they haven't seen him. This is an offense that, yes, even though they're not at Coors Field, they can put up some runs. I mean, they lit up Zach Greinke last season or last year on opening day. They lit him up. And you've got guys like Nolan Arenado, Charlie Blackman, who had over 400 wOBA against right-handed pitching last season. I will have a lot of exposure to Rockies, and I am not shy of it. So,
All right. Let's talk about. Let's move over to the AL for this one. We got the Toronto Blue Jays at the Baltimore Orioles here. Marco Estrada goes for the Jays. Kevin Gausman for the Baltimore Orioles. Did you know that me and Marco Estrada share the same birthday, July 5th? I'm sure everyone cares about that so much. Estrada pretty good on the road last season. 6-2 there, 3-7 at home. So major splits there. He was 2-0. last season against the Orioles. Did have 27 strikeouts in 24 innings, so we've got that. He's got solid numbers here against the current Orioles lineup. They are hitting 188 against him collectively. A lot of homers in there, but a lot of bad batting averages as well. Gausman, very good at home last season. He was 6-2 there with a 2.67 ERA. However, in three starts against the Jays last season, they absolutely lit him up. 12 earned runs in 15 innings, six homers hit all against the Jays in that one. So we're taking a look at the well, obviously, you're not going to have any interest in either pitcher there, right? I guess we can brush that off.
I don't know. Marco Estrada is very interesting because of the history there. Were either of those in Camden Yards? Do you have that?
I don't have that. Okay. I will say for Gausman, though, all his performances against the Jays last year were in Toronto, but I don't have it for Estrada right now.
Yeah, I had no interest in Kevin Gausman. I do have a little bit, because of the history, and I'll have to look a little bit deeper into it, but because of the history, I do have a little bit of interest now in Marco Estrada as possibly a SP2 on DraftKings.
Okay.
You know,
also, fantasy draft as well.
Yes, yes.
Don't forget them.
Yeah, we can. I've got to remember that. They've got an app now that I've got to get into. So,
by the way, tied for first over there in the $5 GPP tonight. So,
yeah. Boom.
Yeah.
Opening day. Yeah, I mean, look, if you're not going with Estrada, I think the Orioles are a very interesting one-off team, or maybe mini-stack team. You can go with Adam Jones, Manny Machado. You can go with Machado, Chris Davis, Davis, Trumbo. I would stay away from a guy like Seth Smith, because if a lefty comes in later on in the game, then he's probably going to get subbed out. I even don't mind... probably not going to go there, but I even don't mind if you want to go Manny Machado, Mark Trumbo, and just skip Chris Davis. So, I mean, you can get creative, but my main targets, if I go there on the Orioles, are going to be the 2, 3, 4, 5 hitters.
Okay.
So, now, depending on what lineup the Blue Jays roll out, because I've heard that, you know, they're going to leave Donaldson in the 3, Batista in the 4, Morales in the 5, and put Tulo up in the 2. Depending on how they kind of work this lineup, I'm going to have some interest here. Donaldson's probably the J stack is probably going to be one of the more popular ones of the afternoon. And for good reason. If they've touched up Gausman in the past, then, you know, people are going to look at that, even though they say they don't believe in BVP. This is one of the better hitters ballparks, if not the best hitters ballpark in the American League. It might be a little bit behind Toronto, but it's not far off. And there could be a lot of runs scored. If you can make it work, this might not be a bad game stack.
All right. I went ahead and checked Estrada, you know, in his his game log against the Orioles last season. So two of those games were in Camden Yards. The first time he faced them there, he only went 5 innings, but he did have 9 strikeouts in that game. The second time he faced them in Camden, he went 7 innings, 4 hits, basically just skilled them without really striking them out much. The one thing I'm realizing here, just looking at Estrada, I mean, he is consistently – his pitch counts are always very good, you know, and that's the sign to me of a good pitcher. You know, consistently there around anywhere from like 90 to 110. You know, even his last – what? His last – 3 of his last 4 starts last season, you know, he had over 100 pitches, at least 97 in the last 4 there. So, I mean, yeah, if we're looking for an efficient pitcher, guys, that's gonna eat up innings for you. I know the ballpark sucks, but again, he's had a very good history against the Orioles, so that could be mitigated.
Yeah, the Baltimore Orioles, just to let you know, their projected lineup right now has a projected ISO of over 200 against right-handed pitching. So now that doesn't have a lot of, you know, obviously that doesn't have any, you know, BVP history taken into account, but it is something to kind of think about if you do plan on going with the Marco Estrada route. Is it can blow? It's a GPP play only, and it can blow up in your face.
Gotcha. Also, too, I just saw this, of course, after I mentioned everything. Wind blown out 13 miles an hour to left field in this game.
Jesus Christ, this game's going to go freaking over the total. What's that total? You said 9.5?
Let me see. This one is 8.5.
Oh,
not many high totals tomorrow. The Pirates-Red Sox one is the highest at 9.
Crazy. Jesus.
All right. Let's talk about the next game here. We've got the San Diego. Oh, I'm sorry. A couple of BVP numbers there between the two teams. Donaldson 6-for-16 with a double and a homer against Gausman. Wellington Castillo, new addition to the Orioles, 7-for-23 against Estrada with 4 homers. So
Jesus Christ. Okay. See here, Wellington Castillo. He is going into Boomers Bombers right now.
Yes.
Just want to make sure.
2700 on FanDuel, so let him know. All right, let's talk about that next one here. We've got the San Diego Padres at the Los Angeles Dodgers here. Julio Chacin goes for the Padres.
No. Yolis.
Yolis. Okay. You. Yolis Chacin. I like that. That sounds a lot more nice. He will go up against some guy named Clayton Kershaw, who is pretty damn good. All right. Chacin was 1-1 against the Dodgers last season in 4 starts, ERA just under 5. And Dodgers did a pretty good number on him last season, 12 earned runs in there, 3 homers, whatever. Has struggles on the road over the last 3 seasons. An average of 5.83 ERA with an opposing batting average of 296. Good Lord. He'll be going up against the best pound-for-pound pitcher in Major League Baseball, probably going to be the highest-owned pitcher on today's slate. And, you know, as I have in the notes here, if you guys are new to MLB DFS, Clayton Kershaw is basically the Russell Westbrook equivalent to NBA DFS. Only factored into 16 decisions last season, but 12-4 with a 1.69 ERA with a whip of 0.72. He is 5-0 against the Padres in his last 8 starts, 1.10 ERA, 79 strikeouts in 57 and a third innings pitched. Okay, so the current Padres roster right now, too, as well, currently 3-for-35 with 14 strikeouts against Kershaw over their career. So, me and you have had this discussion multiple times. I said we would win an award for the debate that we will have with this discussion here. But, look, I, you know, just based off everything I know, you know, opening day is a very, you know, tricky sort of thing most of the time. And I feel like this is a guaranteed win here for Clayton Kershaw. Yeah, you're going to be paying up for it. But you're going to try to take advantage of this by avoiding the masses.
Yeah, I definitely am. If I'm going to go, I'll have exposure to the Dodgers offense. That's kind of how I'll get my exposure through Clayton Kershaw. I'll have guys like, you know, Justin Turner, Corsier might not.
Justin Turner, who, by the way, is one of the hottest hitters on the planet right now.
Yeah, no kidding. He's going to come out and go 0 for his first 38 now. Yasmani Grandal, obviously, Jack Peterson. You know, Chavez Ravine is a very, very good pitcher's ballpark.
Yep.
It doesn't play as good during the day as it does at night. The ball can kind of jump during the day, but that's as we get closer to the weather or to the summer. You know, obviously, you got guys like Andrew Tolles, who's the min price on FanDuel, who's probably going to be leading off. Temper a little bit of it, though, because Yolish Chacin looked really, really good during the WBC. I'm not saying that you need to play Chacin. I'm not saying that at all. But if you take like Seager, Turner, Tolles, and Grandal as a stack, don't be surprised if through the first five innings they don't have a lot of production. Now, this Padres bullpen is not good. They are not good at all. Like, they are probably going to be one of the worst in baseball again this year. They did not do a lot to kind of upgrade it, and at least in my opinion.
They got to get Jeannie Baker from the show.
Yeah, no kidding, right? From Pitch.
Yeah.
but you have to understand that, you know, one at bat can completely change the complexion of your lineup, a tournament, a cash game. And if Andrew Tolles is leading off at $2,000, he, in my opinion, is one of my top value plays of the day.
Andrew Tolles. Interesting. Yeah, I mean, look, what you're doing, you know, trying to get this to Kershaw, and believe me, I think a lot of my unwillingness to kind of move off Kershaw has a lot to do with last season, where I pitched Tyson Ross against I used Ross on opening day against Kershaw. But, you know, obviously, if you don't remember, I think the Dodgers won 11-0, so it did not go well.
Well, yeah, because he had a freaking bum ass shoulder and we didn't know.
I thought I was being sneaky with it, but
you were.
Yeah. Look, I wasn't looking for the win against Kershaw. I was just looking for seven solid innings. He was pretty damn cheap that day. But, I mean, for me, I think this is just about as easy as it gets for a win. I think, you know, there is some risk, like, you know, maybe the Dodgers jump out to a big lead. They don't need Kershaw for as much as they do.
He's not throwing more than six innings tomorrow.
I got to think seven.
If he's throwing seven, he's not getting you the strikeouts that you kind of are paying for. Because you got to understand, with, you know, we talk about it all the time with Westbrook, but with Clayton Kershaw, you're paying 12-6. You need him to get, like, you're paying for him to go out there and dominate. And I think early in the season, you know, they're not. I mean, it's a long season. This is a guy that's going to – they want to throw 200 innings. And unless he's just being extremely efficient, which he could – don't get me wrong. He could be extremely efficient tomorrow. I see a lot of strikeouts, which is great, but I don't see him throwing seven innings. Now we're talking about a difference of 3 points because – he could, you know, throw six innings and get a 47 for you after getting the quality start and the win, or he can throw seven innings and get the 50 for you and maybe another strikeout, so maybe 54, you know, with the quality start and the win. Oh. It's not that big of a difference, but I think early in the season, if you're going to take advantage of fading Kershaw against a team like the Padres, I think this is the time to do it because of the fact that, you know, I don't expect a lot of pitchers going 7, 8, 9 innings tomorrow.
Right.
Now, we did see Bumgarner, throw seven today?
Yep. 13 strikeouts.
Yeah, 13 strikeouts, and, you know, he didn't get the win. We saw, I mean, so seven might not be a bad, you know, projection, but after the back issues that he had last season, if the Dodgers have this game, if they're up 4 or 5 runs in this game and, you know, and his spot's coming up in the order around the seventh inning, I think he's done.
Just for context, last season the matchup was just reversed. The Dodgers were in San Diego, but they did play on opening day. So the Dodgers ended up winning that one 15-0. He goes 7 innings, 1 hit ball, 1 walk, 9 strikeouts in that one. So,
I don't think it's out of the realm of possibilities to see that again. Yeah. I think that could happen. Because I bet you he didn't throw more than 100 pitches.
96.
There you go.
Yeah.
As long as he's going to be around that 100 pitch mark. Wow. And as long as he's efficient with that, I think that he could do that again. Now, is that a great performance? Absolutely. Is it beatable? In baseball, yes, it is, because of the fact that, you know, if you're trying to fit Clayton Kershaw in there, you've got to get guys like Andrew Tolles. You've got to get guys like, you know, Eric Thames, these guys that are at the bottom end of the, you know, pricing pool. And if you have two or three of these guys and they don't pan out, or one of your, you know, mid to higher bats doesn't pan out, then you're going to get beat. I mean, getting Clayton Kershaw, yeah, it gets you off to a really good start, but that doesn't guarantee you anything. I will tell you this. I will have some exposure to a guy like Will Myers, a guy like Ryan Schimpf. Schimpf had over a 270 ISO versus left-handed pitching last year. Schimpf is going to be less than 1% owned.
Yeah, without a doubt.
Because not only is he going up against Clayton Kershaw, it's also left on left.
Yep.
Now, I don't know any BVP numbers, so don't. But I'm just looking at the strict ISO versus left-handed pitching, and that's impressive. That's very impressive for a left-handed bat to have a 275 ISO versus left-handed pitching last season.
Yep. So, especially playing San Diego. I know the park is improved, but still very, very impressive nonetheless.
Yep.
All right. Any other final thoughts here? We really didn't talk about the Dodgers bats too much.
Yeah, I did. I touched on them. You know, Grandal. I'm not playing Adrian Gonzalez.
Well, I'm not going outside naked tomorrow, right?
What do you think about Yasiel Puig?
Oh God, I haven't thought about him in so long.
You know, he had another down performance. People are kind of projecting a bounce back type season. He's under 2,600, and this is a guy that can go out and he can impact the game in a multiple of different ways. Say the lineup is what we have projected on the lineups page, where you've got Grandal, Forsyth, Peterson, and Puig in that 6-7-8 or that 5-6-7-8 spot.
Mm-hmm.
That's a against a lower quality pitching team. Grandal might be a little bit higher priced because I think he's underpriced at $2,800. Even in Chavez Ravine, that is a very, very, very nice little stack there. And it's not going to cost you a lot of money.
No, not at all. Right now I can't really speak to what I like that much there. But, I mean, you got your Turners, you're even an Utley guy like that.
I think it's worth at least small exploring in a thought. Like, I think that, you know, because you have a lot of people that are coming into MLB DFS for the first time, you know, you hear it all the time, you know, you at bats equals money, you know, kind of like minutes equal money in the NBA. Well, that doesn't mean that you can't, you know, you might not get the full amount of at bats with the home team by stacking the lower part of the order, but I'm not stacking to get at bats. I'm stacking for the damage that they can do. And if the Dodgers score 8 runs tomorrow, they're going to get their 4 at bats. So I kind of like that, and I might have just talked myself into it.
I just lost a buck to myself.
Yeah, no kidding. But yeah, I think it's viable. I really do.
All right, sure enough, I'm in. All right, let's get to some of these other games here. We have got, there was BVP to talk about, but just check it out in the article tomorrow. I'll have it in the notes. All right, let's talk about the Detroit Tigers at the Chicago White Sox. This could be an interesting spot to go here with a non-Kershaw pitcher. But we got Justin Verlander for the Tigers, and we got Jose Quintana for the White Sox. Verlander, very good season last year. 16-9, 3.04 ERA, whip of exactly one. His 254 strikeouts in 227 two-thirds innings were the second most in Major League Baseball. Left-handed hitters really struggled against Verlander last year, hit an average of 187. He was great against the White Sox last season, 28 strikeouts in 21 innings. Even in the last 10 starts against the White Sox, 76 strikeouts in the last 68 and two-thirds innings. The one drawback, though, however, he did allow 30 homers last season, which was tied for ninth most in Major League Baseball. And he has been allowing more hits against right-handed bats as opposed to left-handed bats. So that is interesting. And then we talk about Jose Quintana here. Not a bad pitcher. He's been really good in April over the last couple seasons.
We know how much I love my Jose Quintana.
I know so. And keep in mind, Tigers, they did struggle at times against left-handed pitching, which is weird because they have like an all right-handed lineup.
Yeah, that was weird.
The Tigers have had Quintana's number over the last couple seasons. He has allowed 40 earned runs in the last 79 and a third innings pitched against the Tigers. In that span as well, they've hit six homers, but more importantly, he's allowing a batting average of .315 to the Tigers over that span. So we got some good BVP numbers here, especially here for the Tigers. Miguel Cabrera has just absolutely crushed Quintana, 15 of 43. 3.49 average, that is, five doubles, two homers, on base percentage of .440, OPS of 1.045. You can't get off of that at all. Ian Kinsler, Victor Martinez, Justin Upton all have good numbers off Quintana. So there's that. And then, you know, if we're looking at BVP as well, Jose Abreu's got great numbers against Verlander. Again, remember the right-handed bats are hitting Verlander better. Abreu 11 for 29 with a double and four homers. Three walks, eight strikeouts against Verlander.
Yeah, the Tigers are actually tied for third in projected ISO. And with the ownage of Quintana that they have, Quintana will not be on the cheat sheet tomorrow. the Tigers are about the only team that I don't play Jose Quintana against, and it's just because they own him. They really, really do. Even last year, I think at times, even with the Tigers struggling against left-handed pitching, I still think they kind of, you know, tore Jose Quintana a new
butthole.
Yes. So that won't be something. I think this is a fantastic stack. I love Ian Kinsler.
WBC final game.
Yes, he is. He's projected over 70 as far as the DFS Army grade. Obviously, Miguel Cabrera. Justin Upton really turned it on towards the end of last season. I don't mind going there. But one of my sneaky value options at the catcher position is actually James McCann.
Okay,
I like 267 that. ISO versus left-handed pitching last season. 357 WOBA, 124 WRC+. I love James McCann tomorrow. And he will be in a lot of my lineups. I'm going to have to split him up now because, you know, of Wellington Castillo. But James McCann will be in a lot of my lineups.
Hey, give me those numbers on McCann again.
357 WOBA, okay. 267 ISO, 124 WRC plus against left-handed pitching.
My goodness. All right. Yeah. Those are good. Those are good, folks. Those are good. All right. Any other notes before we move on?
I think Justin Verlander's in play for GPPs. The only guy I'm really, besides Jose Abreu, the only guy I'm really, really, you know, kind of afraid of in this lineup as far as taking him deep is Todd Frazier. But we all know that Todd Frazier can strike out a lot too, so it can kind of mitigate itself.
Jersey.
Yep. So I'm not picking on your boy, but you know, he did not have a very good year as far as the putting the ball in play statistics.
I am not a fan of his swing either. One of the ugliest swings in the entire game. Yeah. Usually ends up on his knees, which is a spot that guys do not want to be. Am I right or am I right? All right. Anyway. Not a good look for you, Todd. Not a good look. All right. Let's talk about the next game here on the docket. We got some good 4 o'clock games here. Kansas City Royals at the Minnesota Twins. My boy, Danny Duffy, the lefty, at Irvin Santana in this one. Duffy, great season last year, 12-3. Yeah, and that's even after starting the season in the bullpen. Did have a 3.51 ERA, 1.14 whip, 188 Ks in just under 180 innings. Very good during the day last season. 3-0, 1.85 ERA, 46 strikeouts in 39 innings. The big thing with him, though, you know, I really want to make this my non-Kershaw pitcher, but he did give up 27 homers last season. He is going to be in a homer park here, Target Field. Did decent against the Twins last season. Nothing that was really bad. In terms of Irvin Santana, he did a great job of keeping the ball in the yard. Only allowed 19 homers and 181 innings pitched. Did get hammered by KC, though. So that is something that we want to take into account.
KC kind of owns him.
Yeah, I was at Eric Cosmer, who also had a great WBC. Him and Alex Gordon, tremendous numbers against Mr. Irvin Santana here. There is a little bit of weather concerns there for tomorrow, but looks like it's going to be drizzle, and hopefully that keeps ownership down because I have a lot of interest in Hosmer tomorrow.
Yeah, I do too. This is a sneaky little stack there. If you go Gordon, Moustakas, Kane, Hosmer. I kind of – the only thing I don't like about it is this park doesn't play well to left-handed bats. As far as power, especially left-handed pull bats, it's more of a this is one of the reasons why Brian Dozier was so successful last year is, you know, he can lift and separate and pull the ball. Mm-hmm. It's really down the right field or the left field line that you see a lot of that power. I don't mind Hosmer because he can go the other way. He can hit the gaps. A guy like Brandon Moss, I would normally be on. I'm not on. A guy like Mike Moustakas, I would normally be on. I don't like him unless it's within a stack. Alex Gordon, he can kind of do it all, although he's not typically – he seems like he's a little bit too expensive. I don't know. I mean, the Royals are always that team that – you know, they're going to single and double you to death. You know, they're a great stack, but they don't hit a lot of home runs. I don't know, because I just don't see a lot of right-handed power here, and that's usually where we attack the Twins at mm-hmm. least this ballpark. Not that I like Irvin Santana, but this Royals offense outside of Hosmer and maybe Moustakas might just be a complete fade for me.
Am I seeing this right? Salvi Perez is playing?
He says he is, yes.
I thought he was dead after what happened in the WBC. But
evidently, it was just a sprained shoulder and left shoulder, mind you, not even a throwing shoulder. And a hyperextended knee.
Okay.
After we thought he had pretty much just tore his knee to shreds.
Yeah. So definitely thought that. All right. So Duffy, we know this guy's a great strikeout guy, but a couple of these Twins do have some good numbers against him. Dozier, 8-32, 4 doubles, a triple. Robbie Grossman, 6-11, 2 doubles with a homer. Kenny's Vargas, 7-15 with a double and a homer. Not many strikeouts for Duffy against these Twins, against those guys. I mean, you know me. I love this guy. I'll pitch him against anybody. I don't give a fuck. I love this guy's strikeout upside all the time. But, yeah, I don't know. Maybe you get lucky with some run support, you know, just given the numbers that we've seen with Santana against the Royals. It's a very risky spot. And, again, that's why I'm leaning more towards a short thing like Kershaw, but man, this is he could very well be my SP2 on fantasy draft.
No, thank you.
it's a personal bias.
I love Danny Duffy. Like, you know, he made us money during the WBC.
Hand over fist.
He made us a ton of money last year.
Oh, yeah, that's right. The WBC crushed it that one. I forgot.
You know, he made us a ton of money last year against the Rays. Byron Buxton's supposed to be this, like, he's supposed to actually make the progress that people have been predicting. And for me, you've got to show me. But guys like Miguel Sano and Brian Dozier, that's who, and you could even probably throw Robbie Grossman in there. I mean, these are guys that are that can literally lift and separate. And when you're throwing 97, 95, all you got to do is just get it up and get around on it a little bit and let the pitcher do the work as far as the power. So I will have some – I will not have any Danny Duffy. I will not be joining you on that experience. however, I will have some I will have some Brian Dozier and some Robbie Grossman and some Miguel Sano tomorrow.
One side note here, just saw you're going to have the wind blowing in from left field to first base, it looks like, at about 10 miles an hour. But, you know, this ballpark is pretty good about, you know, like 50 mile an hour winds not holding.
So maybe I'm going to lower my percent exposed on that to – you know, maybe I'm going to lower it from, you know, 20% to maybe now 17. So.
What a douche. All right. All right. Let's talk some Phillies baseball, eh?
No, actually, I've got a lot of interest in this game.
All right. We've got Jeremy Hellickson going for the Phillies and Scott Feldman, new addition for the Reds. If you guys remember, this was actually the same meeting for opening day last season, and everybody and their mother and myself stacked the Reds against what, you know, Hellickson was supposed to just be this gas can, and he completely shut them down last season. In six innings, he had six strikeouts, three hits, one walk, just completely skilled the entire Reds lineup. He actually was worse on the road last season, 4.33 ERA, 1.26 whip in 89 and a third. Even with that great performance at Great American Ballpark, he was very good against the Reds overall last season. In two starts, he did have 15 strikeouts against them in 13 innings pitched, only allowing seven hits and one walk. Left-handed bats against our boy Scott Feldman here. They were tremendous last season. 325 batting average, 387 on base percentage, 504 slugging, 891 OPS. Base stealers over the last three seasons against Scott Feldman, 54 for 65. And the Phils have some guys that can take advantage of this. But I don't know. Where you got any – I know I'm the Phillies expert here, but you got any interest –
in your Phillies?
Well, you do. You already said you got interest, so let's talk about it.
In your Phillies?
Oh, yeah.
Tommy Joseph is underpriced on FanDuel in this matchup.
Oh, yeah. He's basically free.
So is Michael Saunders.
See, I'm not big on Saunders. Like, he hit three homers for me last season. 335,
205, 108 against right-handed pitching last season, and he's in the third best hitter's ballpark in the National League? Probably, maybe in the majors.
I'm just saying, as an overall hitter, I think he's just trade bait for us at the deadline.
Well,
so.
Yeah, but he's got to perform in order to become trade bait.
Yeah, you present an interesting case.
I mean, you could go, okay, so I'm not big on Hernandez and Kendrick, but you could literally go Herrera, Franco, Saunders, Joseph.
Yep.
And
even up Freddie Galvis if you want to get crazy.
Yeah, on DraftKings you could add in Freddie Galvis, or you can go to Howie Kendrick, either one. But I'm just talking about FanDuel, those main four. I mean, your most expensive guy in there is $3,300, and Tommy Joseph is $2,100. I mean, Tommy Joseph he's grossly underpriced.
He's a bopper.
Grossly underpriced on FanDuel, so...
Yeah, you know, for FanDuel, it's interesting, right? Because that's typically where the best offensive players usually are. So in order to get access to that, to get access to Tommy Joseph at that cheap price, you kind of have to, you know, not go there with some power. So that is one thing.
He can give you the power, though.
No, I understand. It's just not as guaranteed as some other guy. But it is baseball. So
yeah, but we talked about this. I know we talked about it last year. If I'm going to go cheap, and especially since FanDuel's now more geared towards the home run, if I'm going to go cheap, instead of going cheap where I can't get power like a guy like or at a position like catcher or second base, why don't I spend up there to be different and go get like a Buster Posey or a Brian Dozier and go cheap at a first base like a Tommy Joseph or a Justin Bour, where these guys still have the ability to go and, you know, put a ball or two over the wall. And I'm not paying nearly the premium. So in this game right here, why am I going to pay for Joey Votto when he could walk four times, when I can go get Tommy Joseph, who could hit me two doubles or a home run, or he could hit me a home run and equal those four walks or singles, whatever you want to say. Yeah. You know, why am I going to do that? Yeah, no, Joey Votto is one of the best guys in DFS baseball. He's a great cash game first baseman, and he's got some power, especially in this matchup in this ballpark. I'm not saying that he's not a good play, but in tournaments where I can get Tommy Joseph at, what, 15?
2,100.
I was going to say percent. You know, 15 to 20% owned. Where
I don't, I think that's generous. I mean,
yeah,
I
I'm overestimating that. But
he was a big staple, you know, at times last season. But I have a feeling. I bet you nobody's even thinking about him tomorrow.
No, because they're looking at guys like Miguel Cabrera, Joey Votto, you know, Chris Davis, you know, Hanley Ramirez. They're looking at all these guys. And, you know, Freddie Freeman even, and you're sitting here with, I can get him for 2,100. Okay, so the difference on his price from FanDuel to DraftKings, okay? And now one thing you got to understand is DraftKings does do dynamic pricing, so they price up based on matchup and ballpark, which is why you could get, you know, Padres, the most expensive Padre tomorrow is Will Myers at $3,800. But most of these guys are right around the 3K mark. But Tommy Joseph is $3,700 on DraftKings. We're talking about a $1,600 difference. I bet you that's probably one of the biggest price gaps as far as position players on the slate tomorrow.
Yeah, and, you know, you make a great point. You know, I'm upset. You know, you keep talking about Tommy Joseph, and my favorite player to use last year was Roman Quinn, Michael Bourne 2.0, and, you know, he's not even cracking the starting lineup until somebody goes down. So
didn't they send him down?
I believe they did.
I think he had options left, so they sent him down. So
It just upsets me because he made me so much money last season. It wasn't even funny. Using him on fantasy draft at minimum price each time out, and I'm sure he was down near it on draft. Whatever. Let's not talk about the past. I'm getting upset just thinking about it. I like some of these. Like, you know, if you want to go down lower in the order, Cameron Rupp, Freddie Galvis, I think they're capable of putting one out of the yard. So that could be an interesting way to go. Let's talk about the Reds because we spent way too much time on the Phillies. Not that I'm upset about that or anything, but you were talking, why would I use Joey Votto? Well, you shouldn't because he's 0-9 in his career against Jeremy Hellickson with 5 strikeouts. So there's that. But, you know, if you want to look at the good side, Zach Cozart, 3-6, 2 doubles, a strikeout against Hellickson. You know, he did very well against him last season, so there is that. But you know, you want to try to get some exposure here. This could be a pretty safe fade. You're going to have a total of 8.5 in this game. So there's that. But I could see this being a low scoring game. I mean,
really, because I don't. I want all the Billy Hamilton.
This is exactly what we expected last season out of these two teams. They both suck, you know. So
yeah, but I think it's a little bit different offense for the Reds. I don't think they're going to win a lot of games because their pitching is absolutely completely a shit show. But you got guys like Zach Cozart. You've got guys like Adam Duvall. Adam Duvall had a 260 ISO versus right-handed pitching last season. And you've got guys in front of him. Like, there's some projections that are showing for the season that are showing Jose Peraza to steal close to 45 bags. Like, you combine him with Billy Hamilton, it's going to be like a freaking damn carousel if Cameron Rupp can't get off his ass and throw somebody out.
I guess.
I'm just saying that, you know, maybe you play Duvall as a one-off, you know, because he's an outfielder at 3,300 and you're getting exposure to, you know, that Reds offense. And you go Peraza at second base and you just skip over the Billy Hamilton, you know, 308 WOBA, which is horrible, by the way. But and guys, it all depends as these lineups come out, where guys are kind of slotted. But if Zach Cozart's batting second and Peraza's batting first, or I don't know how they would work this, but I do know Adam Duvall is going to be in the cleanup spot, and I do know that I'm going to have exposure to him, just like Tommy Joseph. So, yeah. I make probably more lineups on opening day than I do probably the rest of the season as far as on a given slate, just because I love opening day, so I spend more money doing it. And it's kind of one of those things. I will have exposure to both of these power hitters from these teams.
All right. Okay. Rant over. Good. All right. Let's talk about the Cleveland Indians, who were throwing Corey Kluber at the Texas Rangers, who got Hugh Darvish in this one. Kluber, 227 strikeouts in 215 innings pitched last season. That was eighth most in the majors. Texas did a pretty good job of getting to him last season. Seven earned runs he gave up in 13 innings. Did have 13 strikeouts there. Darvish, pretty good against the Indians in his last two starts. He did have 16 strikeouts in 14 innings. All right, I want to start with Darvish. We know Kluber. He's a damn good pitcher. But Darvish was interesting, right? So, you know, he had his season cut short last year by injury. Really didn't pitch deep into games. Like, I believe he averaged, like, just over five innings a start. Admittedly, I really haven't looked that much into him this year, but are we finally going to see him getting meaningful innings, or are they still going to be careful with them?
I think they're going to kind of be careful with them at first, which they should be. But it's not like, you know, he was coming back from Tommy John. Mm-hmm. He was one of those guys that kind of had to work his way back, and they really, really did kind of watch it. I think they watch it at the beginning of the season. I don't think they watch it the whole season. This going against this Indians lineup is not a cakewalk.
Oh no!
Like, this is a great matchup for opening day. You know, you add Edwin Encarnacion in there, and you put him in a ballpark like Texas, and then you've got your sliding guys like Tyler Naquin, who we always loved playing against right-handed pitching. Now you might only get three at bats, but he does hit right-handed pitching pretty well. You know, you've got if they get a healthy Michael Brantley back. I mean, you've got guys like Francisco Lindor, Carlos Santana, Yan Gomes, if he's actually healthy coming back, I mean, this is a very, very, Jose Ramirez, we haven't even talked about. This is a very tough Indians lineup, and one that's going to compete for the division all the way into September. So I'm not going to be picking, unless they end up going on a completely horrific cold streak. I mean, or your name is Sandy Koufax, I'm not throwing you against certain teams to begin the season, and one of them is the Cleveland Indians. Like, it was different tonight because the Cardinals and the Cubs, if that game and that matchup was on tomorrow or today's slate, I probably would not have thrown Carlos Martinez. But because it was only three games and you're kind of limited and, you know, everybody was going to go John Lester, and, you know, you kind of throw a little bit of game theory in there, and that's kind of what led me onto it. Plus, I liked him in the WBC, but I'm not throwing you Darvish. Even though I think that he's a great pitcher, I'm not throwing you Darvish tomorrow.
Yeah, we talk about, you know, all these main tier pitchers probably not going to get overextended. I mean, he is exactly that.
One guy that I could say that he has a very low chance of throwing more than six innings, I would put him at that top of that list. And then just because of how important Clayton Kershaw is to the Dodgers, he would be probably number two. And it's by a wide margin. Like, I don't see Yu Darvish, because he's not efficient when it comes to pitches. Like, they're just not. That's just not their style as far as Japanese baseball. Like, there was something. They would rather sacrifice a hit or something. There was something I was reading, like a strikeout is the greatest feat that you can accomplish over there, or something like that. So that's why he goes deep, deep, deep into counts. And I'm just not doing it.
All right. Sounds good to me. And, you know, I guess it makes it a lot easier of a decision, being that they're going up the Indian, or they're going against the Indians in this one. So fine by me there. All right. Corey Kluber. Interesting. All right. I need some numbers on this Texas offense from last season, because the guy can strike him out, but will he do it against the Rangers?
He could. I don't know the actual, like, history, mm-hmm. but the guys I'm looking at are guys like Mike Napoli, Jonathan Lucroy, Rognet Odor.
Got new horses.
Yeah, he sure does. Even a guy like Nomar Mazara is interesting to me. We don't know what their FanDuel prices are, because they don't have anything out for the late slate right now.
Really?
But yeah, unless something has happened. But, you know, it's, they still don't have anything out for the late slate. So
inconceivable.
I don't know. Those are your three main, options on the late slate on DraftKings, or the all day slate, whichever one. Is Napoli, Odor, and Lucroy. And then you could back it up with Mazzaro. With Adrian Beltre out, Joey Gallo's probably going to get the start at third base, or maybe even DH, and they might rework their infield a little bit. Depending on how they work their infield as the lineup comes out, if Gallo is batting in that... If Gallo's batting in that 9 spot, I don't mind a little wraparound stat going 9, 1, 2, 4, 5 on DraftKings.
You know how Uncle Rico from Napoleon Dynamite said he could throw a football over those mountains? Joey Gallo can hit the baseball over those damn mountains.
Yeah, I wish he would actually show it.
The man has ridiculous power, so yes. That would be great if he could do that. let's take a look at some numbers here. I thought I had some. Encarnacion, brand new addition to the Indians, 5-16, two homers against Darvish over his career. Michael Brantley, the complete opposite, 1-12 with a double, walk, three strikeouts against Darvish. And then very, very small numbers here. Very small sample size. Jurickson Profar, 3-5 with a homer against Kluber. Beltre, 4-10 with a homer, two walks, no strikeouts against Kluber. And I believe, oh, man, he's got a milestone coming up real quick, Beltre. I forget what it is.
Yeah, 3,000 hits.
Yes, that's it. All right. How many does he need?
Like 35 or something like that.
Okay, I don't know. Yeah.
He's
very close.
He's going to get it.
You're right. It was a 3,000 hits because I remember hearing that the other day, and I was like, wow. Like, I can't believe that happened.
Yeah, so...
Very quietly. All right. Anything else here?
Not really.
All right. Let's get to a matchup that a lot of baseball snobs out there are declaring both of these teams as their dark horse World Series winners. We got the Seattle Mariners at the Houston Astros. Mariners throw in Felix Hernandez, the righty, against Dallas Keuchel, the left-hander. Both of these guys really disappointed a lot last season. Especially Felix Hernandez against the Astros was just downright terrible. So in two starts against them last season, he takes the loss in both of those. He only lasts 10 innings, gives up 19 hits, 5 walks, 14 earned runs, 9 of those earned, and only has 6 strikeouts. They straight own this guy. Altuve, Beltran, both with tremendous BVP numbers against them here. Are we ever going to see that Felix Hernandez that we saw a couple years ago? Or
you mean the one that we saw in the WBC?
Yeah, that one, I guess. I didn't pay attention to any of these other countries that weren't the United States.
Yeah, we're going to see it.
I'm sorry. I'm a basketball fanatic. Forgive me, everyone.
Probably not in this matchup, but we are going to see it. Yeah, I remember one of those starts last year. The Astros, it was so bad. They couldn't even, like, they went into Seattle just as ice cold as you could possibly be. And, like, Felix, it was a shorter slate. Felix Hernandez was chalk. And I don't think he even got out of the second inning and allowed, like, 9 earned runs or something like that. It was crazy.
There was one in Houston, too, where they didn't even hit a home run. They just kept, like, gapping them the entire day.
Yeah, there was a couple of them. it was crazy.
Sorry that we remember them, Felix, but, you know, kidding. Get some outs.
I don't know what to do with this one yet. Because these aren't two pitchers that we really want to kind of attack. I guess I would default to BVP and go with, you know, Springer, Altuve. This Astros lineup is not easy. Now, they do hold a lot of big strikeouts. They do strike out a lot. But it is not easy from top to bottom.
I'm going to refer back to that Beating the Book podcast. By the way, I'm going to send you the link to this. This is a very good listen. It's about 2 hours. But, you know, they break down a lot of futures for the MLB teams. And they're talking about how the hell you pronounce it? Norichi Aoki?
Nori Aoki?
Yep. New to the new to the Astros this season. And they're talking about him being a really big piece because – you know, the Astros were just swing for the fences against you last season, but they've done some pretty good work getting a couple on-base guys into their lineup. So Aoki was one of the guys that they were talking about. And, you know, he's not going to be expensive. But, again, you get him on base for guys like Altuve, you know, Correa, the newly added Beltran, McCann's even there now. They got a lot of bopper. Alex Bregman even there as well. So these are all huge names, and you know, you can definitely see why a lot of people are picking them to be the dark horse World Series champ this season.
Yeah, it's all going to be about their pitching. I don't like picking on Keuchel at home. However, I love playing Nelson Cruz against left-handed pitching, especially in a very good hitter's ballpark, who has new dimensions in center field, by the way.
Yes, and remember, this wasn't as great of a hitter's park as we had initially thought.
Yeah, but he's a righty that can lift and separate and hit the proper boxes.
It's not like
there's a ballpark not named Yosemite that can hold Nelson Cruz. I mean, boomstick go boom, and when indeed. He does, oh my God. Yeah, I don't mind. I don't mind Nelson Cruz. Maybe Danny Valencia is back in our lives.
Hey, before you go on, I have to tell you Nelly's numbers against Keuchel, because they're so fabulous. 9 of 22, double, 3 homers.
Yeah.
4 walks, OPS of 1.345.
Yep. Nelly, come on down.
Yeah, Danny Valencia in Seattle. There's another one of those. Oh, yeah, that guy's there.
Yeah, so anyway, no kidding, right?
Valencia, great numbers, too, against Keuchel. 8 of 16, 2 doubles, 2 homers, 3 walks. I don't like the fact that he struck out 6 times against them, but those numbers are pretty good.
Yeah.
That's, other than that.
I don't mind the strikeouts because you don't get negatives for him.
Yeah, sure.
I mean, I'm looking for, in this matchup, in the late slate, with it being 3 games, I'm looking for dongs. And those are two, I'm looking for, you know, production. And you're telling me that they have that type of, those type of numbers? Yeah. I don't mind it.
By the way, thank you for posting the dong song. I had never seen that, and I couldn't stop laughing. So
yeah, that dude actually, he moved from Boston, and he lives here in Broken Arrow now. So
no shit.
Yeah,
look at that. Why would anybody do that?
I don't know. We were gonna.
No offense, but why would you go from Boston to Oklahoma? That just doesn't make sense.
I think it was a job or family or something. I don't know.
Okay, all right, that'll do it. Ah, my boy Carlos Ruiz on the Mariners as well. All right, any other matchups here before we get to the grand finale? And by grand finale, I mean last game. Let's do it. All right, we got the Angels at the Oakland A's here. We're going to have Ricky Nolasco against Kendall Graveman. If you thought that Phillies-Reds pitching matchup was a shit fest, well, I present this to you. I didn't even write notes down on this game because they're so worthless. So, all right, why don't you just take it away?
It's worth talking about the fade, but I don't mind, like, a couple one-offs here. For the A's, Ryan Healy, Chris Davis, Matt Joyce are all kind of in play a little bit. I wouldn't stack it, but you can play them as one-offs. Obviously, Mike Trout's always in play. You know, CJ Cron's in play. That's pretty much about it. Maybe even a little bit of Fat Albert, but I don't have a lot of interest in this game. At all.
I can't. Why are the Angels not rolling with Shoemaker as their ace?
I believe they did this because of matchup, because Ricky Nolasco is a fly ball pitcher and they can take advantage of the big ballpark. You're asking me to get in the mind of a Major League Baseball manager that, you know, has had a hard time buying into analytics. So, and I'm not completely 100% sold on, like, analytics aren't everything, but I think they are of value to the game, and so.
All right, I was mistaken. Nolasco, it's amazing how you start getting all these things like come back to you. Nolasco had a really noticeable.
He was
split.
Traded for Shoemaker. Or who was that for? I forgot who that was for. But they, Angels traded the Twins for Nolasco at the trade deadline last season, and we were all kind of like, huh, what? Like, the trade didn't make any sense, and so I mean, now he's their opening day starter, whoop-de-doo, you know.
I'm trying to think, he had a big noticeable split last year. I'm just looking at he did allow 18 homers to right-handed pitching as opposed to 8 to lefties. There's that, but I gotta look into this one. There was something specific about something in his splits that was just terrible, and I was able to pick on it a lot less. I don't know. I will think about it. Nothing really in these terms of BVP.
Yeah, these aren't, and you don't have to worry about strikeouts. These are two teams that are going to put the ball in play against these two pitchers. So that's why I don't mind guys like, you know, that swing for the fences a little bit, like Chris Davis and Matt Joyce, even in a ballpark that, and Ryan Healy, even in a ballpark that, you know, isn't powerful. You're going to get these guys at 3% owned.
Yeah, definitely. Maybe.
So.
And keep in mind, too, this game is almost 2 hours after that Astros-A's game. I know FanDuel, on their main slate, they don't have, you know, those last three games or whatever. But if you're playing, I don't even know what DraftKings is doing. But
DraftKings has got their main slate where all their big tournaments are. The last games start at 4:05 Eastern time.
All right. Yeah, I know. Fantasy Draft, they have from the day from start to finish is one of their tournaments. So that's pretty cool.
They have that as well. So, and they have late slates. That's why I was kind of shocked with FanDuel.
So. Gotcha. All right. Well, that does it for our first MLB podcast of 2017. It actually went a lot more smooth than I thought it was going to go. I thought I was just going to forget shit left and right, but that certainly wasn't the case. All right. So remember, if you want to try the DFS Army out for a whole week for free, you want to use the promo code opening day. You go to dfsarmy.com, type all that in, text will get in touch with you, and you'll be set to go. If you want to sign up with us, it's going to be $25 a month. I think that's a great deal for what you get. Now, we're not going to have the domination station for baseball because it doesn't make sense to have so. But, folks, we got all sorts of tools. You got me, Keith, Bernsey, all, and Chapadong. You got all the guys in there that are going to be helping you out left and right this summer. And when MLB is the only game in town 7 days a week, that's what we're doing. We're not even messing around with basketball or anything like that. So that is when we're at our best. Basketball is almost over. We're almost at playoff time. That's exciting as well. So definitely check us out. If you want to follow us on Twitter too, you can find me at 14a.walsh. You can find Keith at Boomers DFS Daddy. Lots of good things going on there for us as well. And I know, you know, you have a nice tradition. You like to go out with your friends on opening day for baseball, so enjoy that tomorrow. I will just be hanging out, taking everything in, and hopefully winning a shit ton of money.
Yeah, well, I'll be taking it in, and I'll be updating the lineups as they come out from the bar.
Indeed, indeed. All right, once again, for me, Keith, and the rest of the DFS Army, we gone.
Peace.